You write about the relationship of East and West, in particular about India.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in summer 2008, and we have an election going on in the United States. And you've spoken before about what the United States and Bush have done in the world. Bring us up to date. What do you think is going on in terms of the world? Do you have any special knowledge that just comes from your travels?
Not really. I mean, I think there's an extraordinary level of interest in the American election around the world. I mean, I think more than there's ever been in an American presidential election. I saw a write-up somewhere about the number of column inches being devoted to covering this election around the world. And it's, you know, many, many times more than have ever been devoted to it before. I mean, like 10 times more. And I think that's because people see it as being an unusually important moment. I mean, let's say the last 8 years have been catastrophic in many ways for America's relationship with the world. And yet, I've always believed there's an underlying recognition in many parts of the world that it's not particularly valuable to anybody for America and the rest of the planet to be at odds. You know, it's not good for America, but it's not good for other people either. You know, and there's still an enormous interest in things American. You know, people wear American clothes and they see American movies and they read American books. And there's the so-called anti-Americanism is by no means universal, and there's much interest still. And I think what people are looking to see is evidence of a change, really. I mean, I think to put it at its simplest, people want to be shown that what will come after November will be really different than what has gone on in the last 8 years. And I think if people were to feel that, then a large amount of this anti-American sentiment would very rapidly fade away. When in the previous administration, there was very little evidence of such sentiment. You know, when President Clinton went to India, he was greeted with open arms. It was enormously popular. You know, there was no anti-sentiment at all. And that could easily be the case again. So the question is how to convince the world that there is going to be a change. You know, and I mean, I've made no secret of my belief that the change candidate is quite clearly Obama. I mean, it's not hard to say that. But even as between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, I think he was the change candidate. But when compared to John McCain, it's obvious.
Do you think it's more than symbolism? I mean, the fact that he's black or of color.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that is a part of it. But I hope it. No, I think it has to be more than symbolism. You know, the symbolism will get him, if he were elected, it would get him an initial burst of, let's say, goodwill and people willing to give him a chance, you know, and so on. But in the end, people have to deliver. You know, there has to be a real change.
In India itself, do you spend a lot of time?
Yeah, yes. I was there last in January this year.
In Mumbai?
Yeah.
When you're there, how do people perceive Bush and the United States?
Not very well. Let's be polite here. Not very well.
They're also looking very strongly at this election.
Yeah, but certainly, India, which now has this gigantic economic success story, this very, very successful, capitalist class, you know, and super capitalist class, that's an extremely cosmopolitan, outward-looking internationalist community. They're by no means parochial, you know. And clearly, as the nature of business is, it's a very international, and much of their business has to do with the United States. So it's not really in anyone's interest to take a strongly anti-American view, even in India. But people are looking for a change. There's no question of that.
Well, when we look at the United States and we see the fundamentalists and we look at the Islamists of the Middle East, and then we look at the Hindu fundamentalists over in India, there seems to be kind of a pattern that in the world of this fanaticism. And I'm wondering now, it strikes me that out of the blue, it seems everybody just got tired of it. Is this true?
I really hope you're right. I mean, I have a bit of a smell of that too, you know. And the pendulum always swings. You know, one of the things we know about human life is that people get sick of one thing and want another thing. And I hope we're reaching that point, because I always believed that the end of Islamic radicalism would come when people in Muslim countries got sick of it, you know, and they would turn against it in the way that the Catholics of Northern Ireland turned against the IRA and just didn't want to be represented by that kind of violent behavior. There's some evidence that, you know, of splits appearing, and even in Al-Qaeda, for former advocates of violence now saying that it's the wrong path. And I think people are pretty sick of it here, frankly, the religiosity that's crept into public life. It'd be nice to have a change from that.
In your book, your latest book, Enchantress of Florence, out of the blue, Savonarola, there's a small portion of the book, rose up to strike down the licentiousness of Florence, and yet, what was it, only 8 years later, he got burned.
He got fried. Yeah, that's it. People can't stand it for very long. Of course, though, he had his glorious moment with the so-called bonfire of the vanities, where he got everybody to literally set fire to all their indulgent, you know, pleasure-loving objects, including works of art, jewelry, and so on. But human nature is more open-hearted than the Savonarolas of this world will allow. And in the end, they can't stand it anymore. And certainly, yes, in his case, they did what he'd done. I mean, after the bonfire of the vanities came the bonfire of Savonarola.
Salman Rushdie, your latest book, Enchantress of Florence, takes place 400 or 500 years ago and is a magic realist fantasy. For people who are tuned into current events in politics, what do you think reading a book like that with its metaphors can do for them?
Well, one of the things that happens in the book is a portrait of the development, if you like, of ideas of power that we still use. You know, this is, after all, the age of the Medicis and the Borgias and the Sforzas and so on, and an age when Machiavelli was observing the ruthlessness and cynicism of the princes of his time and codifying that behavior into the famous little book, The Prince. It was a time in the East when the Emperor Akbar was also wrestling with ideas of how to rule. You know, that was it possible to rule a large country through kindness? You know, or was it necessary to be cruel? Let's say, could you be a just king? Or in order to be a king, did you have to be unjust? And these are questions which are, of course, you know, in all our minds still today. And it's interesting to go back to the period at which they were first wrestled out. And also, of course, this is also a time of great war, the 16th century. All across the world, from the East to the West, there are wars raging. And, you know, if we think we're brutal now, then we were brutal then. You know, if we're worried about torture now, you should check out the torture of the 16th century. So there's plenty, I think, in a kind of quite natural way, without straining for it, that somebody's standing in the present moment, looking back at the past, can see in it.
For you, is it easier writing a novel set in the past of several hundred years ago, like Enchantress, or the more recent past, like Shalimar the Clown, or something more current, like Fury?
No, I mean, every book has certain things about it. A book are easier and other things are more difficult. You know, I mean, the problem of a book like Fury, which is ultra-contemporary, is exactly that. How do you write a book which is about the day before yesterday without it very rapidly becoming yesterday's papers? You know, and so each book comes with opportunities and problems, you know, and you just have to solve each one.
Do you think it's easier to draw conclusions from a story that deals with the particulars rather than one that deals in a more general sense?
Yeah, I think the art of the novel is to be particular. You know, I think generalities get you nowhere in a novel. It has to be about, you know, this woman, Madame Bovary, in this town, feeling bored with this husband and looking for an affair with this other man, you know. If people reading that book wish to generalize from it to their own experience, that's the reader's privilege. You know, the writer's business is to be particular.
Salman Rushdie, it sounds to me as if you're pretty encouraged by what's going on in the country right now.
I'm cautiously encouraged, but of course the test is November. You know, I mean, there could be a terrible disappointment in November for people of my cast of mind. At the moment, I'm hopeful. You know, I would like to see the return of the kind of America that I fell in love with. You know, and that America is still there in terms of people that I know and their way of thinking. There are many extraordinary people in this country, and I would just like to see that brighter, more open-hearted, less bigoted, and certainly less imperialistic America come back.
Salman Rushdie, whose latest novel is The Enchantress of Florence. I'm Richard Walensky on The Morning Show.